Feldman World
Log
Review.
Talk Radio.
That's your world. I just live in it.
The number you have reached, 911, has been changed to a non-published number.
Go ahead. Make my day.
Hey, good evening, and welcome to Feldman World Review. This is Brian Irving, your host here at Feldman World Review, welcoming you in. Appreciate you spending some of your 9/11 with me. You know, it's a very somber day. It's a very sad day in the memory. 19 years ago, they hit the World Trade Centers. They hit the Pentagon. They tried to hit another location. Some think it was the White House. Some think it was Congress. But those heroes took Flight 93 down into Shanksville. I think, I don't know if you guys saw Trump's speech today, but I thought it was a very good speech. You know, but 9/11's had a very interesting effect on America. Something that I would never have thought. Things happened that just continue to blow my mind. And I'm going to cover a couple of those things in the journal in a little bit. Phones will be open, at least from the second half of the show, maybe earlier, 515-605-9344. That's 515-605-9344 if you want to call in. I'd love you to be part of the show. If you want to share a experience or a personal experience that you had with 9/11, I mean, at the time it happened, I lived in New Jersey right outside of New York, and it seemed like everybody knew somebody that died there or knew somebody that died there. It impacted all communities in the New York, New Jersey, Connecticut, tri-state area. All communities, white, black, Asian, African, Muslim, Jewish, Christian, everyone, every culture had people murdered. And in the most grotesque way, so many people were just incinerated by the splashing fuel that was coming when the plane went in. The fuel just blew. And it was just an absolutely horrible day. But September 11th has a bunch of interesting things on it, and I always like to look back on history. I try to do it in every show just to see, you know, just to reflect, because it leads to a lot of understandings of things that happen. You know, if you don't learn from history, you're bound to repeat it. And it seems like America is constantly stuck in a, you know, in a loop, in a loop. Don't you think so? It's just a crazy loop. But in 1941, on September 11th, Charles Lindbergh, you know, he was the he was an aviator, a military officer, an author, an inventor. He was also a supporter of the Nazi Party. On September 11, 1941, he gave what they called the Des Moines Speech. And he accused British, the Jews, and FDR administration for pressing for a war with Germany. But, you know, I think as it stands now, it was the right decision to fight fascism. Not just, you know, not just to free all some of my relatives and many of our relatives in Germany at the time, but that was the right war to fight. And Charles Lindbergh didn't want us to go in. He thought we were, you know, it was just a whole lot of, I don't know what, politics. 1965, on September 11th, Indo-Pakistani War. The Indian Army captures the town of Berkey, just south of Lahore, and we have the India-Pakistan situation. We've lived with it for years, and it continues on. And just like in America, if there are certain issues that go on and on and on, it seems to keep people employed, you know, instead of them being able to live in some kind of a shared peace at that border. In the United States, we backed Pakistan. You know, they got the bomb, and we wanted to be their friend. We were, I guess, more threatened by Pakistan. I always thought we should have a lot closer and stronger relations with India. You know, the Hindu, especially the Hindu people, because, you know, they have more of a little more humanist. Just a little more humanist. 1967, on September 11th, the Chinese People's Liberation Army, the PLA, launched an attack on Indian posts at Nathula, Sikkim, India, which resulted in military clashes. And that was 1967. So, you know, you figure that's 30-plus years ago. And look at the mess India has now. You know, there was a great influx of outside influence into India. You know, India was a great Hindu state, and it's not so much anymore. Something we should learn from as well. 1970, on September 11th, the Dawson Field hijackers released 88 of their hostages. The remaining hostages, mostly Jews and Israeli citizens, are held until September 25th. Now, members of the Popular Front for the Liberation of Palestine, you know, these terrorists with their issues continue, they hijacked four airliners. You know, the people that like to say that 9/11 was a conspiracy, and I want to talk about that too. You know, here's a perfect example of how they used aviation. Somebody liked the aviation. Well, they hijacked four airliners. In fact, any of us that's in my age group, who grew up around the 60s and 70s, there was constantly hijackings, planes being taken. They'd take hostages. They'd land it. They'd threaten people's lives. They would kill people. Even the Achille Lauro, the boat, they found it. But September 11, 1970, the PFLP hijacked four airliners bound for New York City and one for London. Three aircraft were forced to land at Dawson Field, a remote desert airstrip near Jaca, Jordan, formerly the Royal Air Force Station, Jerka. That was 1970. September 11th, 1973, a coup in Chile, funded by the CIA and headed by General Augusto Pinochet, topples theoretically the democratically elected president Salvador Allende. You know, who was a doctor, he was a socialist politician. And right away, Pinochet came in and basically put dictatorial power in place, you know, until he got ousted in 1988. But he stayed in power, really was stayed in power until 1990. You know, in Chile, good old Chile. In September 11th, 1976, a bomb planted by a Croatian terrorist, Zvonko Guzik, is found in New York City's Grand Central Terminal. One NYPD officer is killed while trying to defuse the bomb. That was 76, you know. See, I'm just saying, we've been here before. We got short memories, America. We got short memories. And the kids that are, many of the kids that were born after 9/11, they have no idea. They have no idea. September the 11th, 1982, the international forces that were guaranteeing the safety of Palestinian refugees following Israel's 1982 invasion of Lebanon leave Beirut. And they were really beat up, you know, by the Falange forces, which were the Lebanese Christian forces. You know, and they always paint that picture in a certain way. But, you know, Ariel Sharon and Colonel Haddad, the Lebanese army back in the 70s and early 80s, they chased Arafat around. He was running around. They just chased him for a long time. And to no avail, obviously, he survived pretty well. Then in 2001, we know the September 11 attacks were a series of coordinated terrorist attacks killing 2,977 people using four aircraft, hijacked by 19 members of Al-Qaeda. A two aircraft crash, you know, and I, you know, there seems to be proof that Saudi Arabia was involved here, so. But two aircraft crash into the World Trade Center in New York City, a third crashes into the Pentagon, you know, in Arlington, Virginia, and the fourth, good old Flight 93 into Shanksville, PA. Those are some heroes. You know, they let that plane go down. They took that plane down, and people mentioned it all during the day. They saved thousands. They could have saved thousands of people. If they were truly headed to the Congress or the White House or wherever, you know, these are some pretty sick people. 2007, Russia tested the largest conventional weapon ever And they called it the father of all bombs. And, you know, we have the Moab, the mother of all bombs. I just wonder where this, you know, where this language went back for. That was 2007. 2011 on 9/11, the National September 11 Memorial Museum opened on the 10th anniversary of the attacks. And that's quite a museum. There's a lot there. There's a lot there to see. And in 2012, you know, we were given another gift on 9/11. And it was sort of a gift from Hillary Clinton and Barack Hussein Obama. The U.S. Embassy in Benghazi, Libya, was attacked, resulting in four deaths. And it wasn't just deaths. You know, we all know now that they were pushing weapons to the quote-unquote Free Syrian Army, and they were pushing weapons to these groups in Libya. Who's they? Oh, it was the Hillary Clinton State Department and the Obama administration. And they lost control of the weapons, and they sent this ambassador with a very small detail to go try to negotiate some of this stuff. They all got killed. And from what we know, right, they watched it on TV. They sat in the White House and watched it all happen on TV while our men are killed. And Hillary Clinton, of course she's listening to me tonight. Of course she is. You know, she still has a lot to answer for. You know, they've managed to protect her for so many years, that Hillary Clinton. So many years. And, you know, so today, you know, we don't just think about 9/11, but we think about those men in Benghazi that were just left to die. So they could cover themselves. And then the whole lie about the video, some videographer, some college kid with a high school level video. I mean, it was horrible acting. It was horrible shots. It was just terrible. Trying to claim that Susan Rice, the lying Susan Rice out there talking about, you know, on 9/11, you know, talking about, you know, and this part in September, you know, just a couple of days back was the anniversary when the PFLP massacred the entire Israeli Olympic team. So there's actually things going on here. You know, there's a lot of these things have been going on for a long time, a very long time. There's no question about that. But now for my COVID update, the COVID update story is, you know, as Pam Geller, love Pam Geller's site, you should go check it out, GellerReport.com. And she described the Democrats really well. She calls them the misery party. The misery party. Because they are about misery. They have their own misery. They want everyone to feel as miserable as they do. You know, they have no souls. They have sold themselves out. You know, unlike the president, who gave up money, who's lost money being president, who gives away his pay. He had power, he had fame, he had money. These people became professional politicians for those same reasons. And they've gotten rich, especially the Democrats. They've gotten, and a bunch of the rhinos, they've gotten ridiculously rich on the tax money. Now Mitt brought some money with him, you know, scumbag, future Democrat Mitt Romney. But, you know, they got rich. Now, the Senate Democrats blocked the GOP COVID-19 bill that included the unemployment relief. You know, it's astounding. Number one, it's astounding these people keep getting reelected. And it's also astounding that the left and the media somehow defend them as if they're going to do anything for anybody but themselves. Joe Biden, Dianne Feinstein, Pelosi. Shoot, these people got rich on their lies and did nothing. They've done nothing. I mean, anybody, you know, you want to call in and tell me all the statutes they passed, all the laws, all the bills they got through, all the programs they fought for, other than attacking Trump for the last, really, for 5-6 years? I mean, it's ridiculous. And Pam notes that the Democrats are working furiously to impose the pain and misery on the American people in their sadistic, cruel pursuit of power. They'll lie, they'll cheat, they'll steal, and they'll murder to defeat Trump. And Steve Nelson wrote in the New York Post that Senate Democrats on Thursday blocked a coronavirus stimulus bill that included funds for people left unemployed by the pandemic. And believe me, I've been living that one. Now, in a party line vote, which I'll tell you, you got to admit, man, the Democrats stick together. You know, they might knife each other, you know, in the back in meetings, but behind closed doors. But man, the Democrats withheld the 60 votes needed to consider the bill, continuing months-long gridlock ahead of the election day. Republican leaders said the bill included widely supported bipartisan ideas, but Democrats argued it didn't do enough. Senate Minority Leader Chuck Schumer said it was a rather pointless vote on the latest highly partisan Republican emaciated COVID relief bill. What is, you know, I am tired of these pork barrel spending. I'm tired of these bills that, you know, they put all these other things in it to buy votes within the Senate and the House. Each appropriation, I mean, the right way to do this is each appropriation should stand on its own. So if those poor idiots, instead of getting, you know, getting to the House and the Senate at 10 o'clock in the morning and then leaving at 4 and taking a 2-hour lunch break and using the beauty parlor in the congressional building, and there's two hot restaurants and a cafeteria there, and instead of spending all their time there, if they have to go down and vote for 10 bills, these bills should be broken up into 10 different things, 10 different separate bills. I mean, I don't know how, you know, financially, if you're trying to understand the finances, how can you just keep throwing this stuff together? You can't. But Majority Whip John Thune, Republican from South Dakota, argued that some money is better than no money. What an argument. The guy's a genius, right? I mean, there's a lot of things that the Republicans, they don't know how to fight. They don't know how to battle. They don't know how to win these arguments. Now, the bill proposed a $300 weekly unemployment subsidy, which is down $300 from before. But that's still still a big help to many families and many families with children and on. $105 billion for schools so they could get this whole COVID thing under control and get the hell open. $20 billion for farmers. Why don't we love the farmers? In fact, we should get back to more regional farming again. You know, they took all these farms and turned them into tract housing units all over the country. You know, while we're importing food from Central America, from Mexico, even from Canada, for God's sakes, we should be doing our own regional farming. You know, and it gave $10 billion to the Postal Service and $10 billion for child care assistance. It included $47 billion for vaccines and testing and $250 billion for the Paycheck Protection Program, which gives small businesses forgivable loans for retaining staff who aren't needed to reduce demand. The rejected bill also would have given businesses liability protection, except in cases of gross negligence and misconduct. Now, Schumer called the liability protection a poison pill. Of course he would. The bill did not include another round of $1,200 stimulus checks to most Americans, with both sides and President Trump's support. Now, the failure of the bill creates new turbulence for the unemployed. Democrats want to renew the $600 a week that expired, but they also want money to bail out New York, Chicago, L.A. for fiscal mismanagement that has nothing to do with COVID. They want money for illegal aliens. They want all these different things thrown in, trillions and trillions of dollars. You know, but this is how they feel about the American citizens. They don't. They don't feel for the American citizens at all. You know, the farmers need it. The businesses need it. You know, and I just heard that, in some areas, restaurants are going to start opening again, and you know, it's insane. They got to keep this narrative going through the election because it's all they got, because they don't have anything to stand on. They don't have any new ideas. They don't have anything, as usual. And the Democrats have just proven themselves to be evil. You know, you got AOC out there with her bubbly BS Marxism. You know, you've got Tlaib and Omar. You know, they're probably celebrating today. You know, 9/11. This is a great day for them. Right? Because some people did something, right? Well, here's my journal, 9/11. 9/11. You know, when it happened, I said to myself out loud, see, it's them coming to hurt America. And I thought to myself, finally, the world, the United States, would learn who this enemy is. You know, this Islamist enemy that Israel has been fighting since the beginning of the time. You know, that has been committing terrorist acts. I mean, does anybody believe that Sirhan Sirhan, the Palestinian that murdered Robert F. Kennedy, does anybody believe that he was a lone wolf, really? You know, this has been going on for a long time, the hijackings. They love hijackings, you know? But I really hope that the world would finally see it. You know, and we'd start to attack, we'd start to protect our society, protect ourselves, and be realistic about this. You know, Winston Churchill predicted the invasion of Europe, you know, by the Muslims. Because they come in and they want Sharia, you know, first. But what do we get? Instead, something that I never thought could happen. In 2008, we got a Barack Hussein Obama as a president. You know, forget the fact that, you know he sounded good. You know, one of the things I remember about Obama, in the middle of the summer of 2007, he was doing all these speeches. It was before they called the Clintons racist, which totally turned the race around. And this guy was on C-SPAN, and he was giving a speech, and he was going on and on. And I listened to him. It was about an hour and a half speech. And I listened, and he didn't say anything. But it sounded really great. It was incredible. But Barack Hussein Obama, like he said, when the winds of change come or whatever, he's standing with the Muslims. He said it. That's from his book. And that was true. In fact, Obama hired former Muslim Brotherhood, former Hamas, former people involved in terrorism to work in the White House, to set his foreign policy along with Valerie Jarrett and Susan Rice, you know, and Brennan and Hagel and Hillary and all the rest of them. But I couldn't believe that we could do that, that we just were so, I don't know. You know, for decades and decades, you know, the Islamist Jihad has been working to destroy, you know, America and Israel. And now they've teamed up. Even BLM is involved with Islamists. I mean, the founders of BLM were all Muslims. The ladies were all Muslim. And that's where their philosophy is going from. That's why I dubbed these riots that we've seen since the George Floyd incident, these riots that we've seen, I call it the Marxist-Islamist Revolutionary Coalition, because they're working together. Even Antifa's made peace with the neo-Nazis. You know, they say, oh, left and right. No, it's not. The, you know, the Nazis, you know, Nazi was short for, right, the National Socialist German Workers Party. They were Marxists. They were socialist Marxists. There's no such thing as right-wing socialism. I'm sorry. That type of fascism is the same, whether you call it national socialism, you call it communism, you call it fascism, totalitarianism, whatever you want to call it. I don't go for this right-wing stuff, because the more you go to the right, the more you end up in no system. You know, like, you know, no system. Because Antifa, they're not anarchists. They're communists. They're communists. Now they're working with the jihadis. They're there. And I remember in Ferguson, you know, seeing a Hamas flag waving in Ferguson and Hamas patches in Ferguson. You know, it's incredible. And I've heard a lot of conspiracies about who did 9/11. Lots of conspiracies. You know, some people did something incident. You know, some people call it an inside job, that the government did it. Our own government planned this whole thing to push war in Iraq and Syria. You know, if it wasn't for the history of Islamic Jihad. See, in 1917, the British finally took the caliphate away. They took the caliphate away, and they repartitioned the area. You know, that's why the Kurds are mixed in three different countries instead of in Kurdistan. Because they chopped it all up. They forced people that had been warring for thousands of years to live together. And the British really messed up the Middle East. There's no question about it. And don't forget, in 1948, Israel declared independence from the British, getting the British out. That was the main thing. And just remember, America and Israel, when you hear all the Marxist rhetoric about colonialism, just remember this. United States and Israel fought against that colonial mess and those colonial masters. And one drove them out of America, drove them out of Israel. You know? But all these conspiracies, you know, I just don't think so. You know, I have followed this 100-year jihad since 1917. It's basically a 100-year jihad. They formed the Muslim Brotherhood to stop Jewish immigration to what was then a British colony called Palestine. The Jews wanted to return to Israel. They wanted to return to Jerusalem. They wanted to return to their homeland. We were driven out. Read the Quran. 6th, 7th, 8th century. Jews driven out. Jews beheaded. Jews destroyed. Jews driven all over the world. That's what created the diaspora for Jews. You know? So I feel very strongly that 9/11 was planned and perpetrated by these jihadi terrorists. Now, the financing could have come from a lot of places. You know, we've heard Saudi Arabia was involved and that they got protected. We've heard Iran could have been involved. You know, other people could have been involved. There's a lot of people that want to hurt America. We have the new axis of evil today: China, Russia, and Iran. Although they're the friends of the Democrats. Funny enough. But I've been following this 100-year jihad since the 70s. And this idea that this wasn't committed by terrorists is pretty weak in my mind. I know what they're saying. You know, this is all set up. I remember there was some guy asking questions. There's some movie out there on Amazon Prime. He was talking about, you know, the government would never attack themselves, and the government would never lie, and the government would never, you know, all these inferences. You know, without facts. But the facts we know. Yeah, the facts we know. You know, airplanes were hijacked, flown into the World Trade Centers, flown into the Pentagon. The other one was going to fly into somewhere, crashed in Shanksville. They were all training here as pilots. Because they've always done the pilot thing, okay? They've always done the hijacking pilot thing. But think of all the things. In 1922, the Muslim Brotherhood is founded. They want to retake the caliphate. That's their dream. They want that caliphate back. Now, that schmuck in Turkey, he thinks he's the head of the caliphate. And the Iranians think they're going to be the reigning king of the caliphate. They are the number one sponsor of terror in the world, which is why Obama and Kerry and Hillary and many others should be grand juries about their activities and why they were motivated to give them billions of dollars back that was frozen after they took the hostages for 444 days until Reagan came in, because they thought Reagan would really come and kick their ass. So they let them all go. They let the hostages go. But 1922, the Muslim Brotherhood's founded to start this Islamic Jihad. In 1938, okay, the Arab countries of Libya, Egypt, Jordan, Syria, Iraq, they all pledged solidarity with the Nazis. And they helped the Nazis fight against the British and the American forces through the northern deserts of Africa and through the Middle East, because they were fighting for control of the oil. Hitler was trying to get control of the oil. 1945, they start to form the Ba'ath Socialist Party, a mirror image of the National Socialist Party in Germany. The uniforms, the socialism, it was Islamic socialism. Then there was the UAR, the United Arab Republics of the 50s and 60s, attacking Israel. You know, the Six-Day War, the Yom Kippur War, the war after war after war, and all the hijackings going on. You know, Israel finally makes peace with Egypt. Egypt and Israel, that border, you could go to Israel and then you could take a bus into Gaza and go see the, and go into Egypt and see the pyramids, visit the archaeological digs. Sadat, who wore a Nazi uniform, changed his tune, signed an agreement with Israel. And what happens? The Muslim Brotherhood assassinates him in 1986. Mubarak takes over. They call Mubarak a fascist. It goes on and on. Then there's Benghazi. There's all the terrorist attacks in England, terrorist attacks in France, terrorist attacks in Spain, terrorist attacks in Tunisia, terrorist attacks in Texas. And you're going to tell me that they have nothing to do with it? It's some kind of inside job? It's not this Islamist, jihadist terror? I mean, I really can't take it anymore. You know, I love a good conspiracy theory. You know, but you can't be eaten up by it. But it goes on and on. Now, when 9/11 happened, they keep saying that we were united. We were united. America was united. Yeah, for a few months. You know, eventually, you know, don't forget, there was an election for the House. You know, 2004, you know, Bush gets reelected. But by 2006, they had vilified Bush with all this propaganda that you hear. You know, the propaganda that says it was an inside job, that's cover for the terrorists and jihadists. That would, and the Russians, the Chinese, the Iranians, they would all push the narrative because it helps theirs. You know, it seems kind of obvious what they do now. Pelosi takes the House in 2006, then suddenly the economy crashes. There's always those coincidences, right? They want to blame George Bush, they want to blame 9/11, they want to blame this, that, and the other thing. But they were in charge of the purse strings in 2006 when the economy tanked. You know, Obama and his administration, the one that created this incredible economy that Trump's claiming to now. I mean, it's ridiculous. You know, Trump changed our economy by cutting regulation. The tax cut was important, but it was cutting the regulation, so much regulation from Clinton and from Obama that had to go. Because that's what did it. And this idea that, you know, Obama was ushering in this great economy after saying that these manufacturing jobs would never come back and we all better go learn how to do computer programming, you know, that was it was a joke. It was a lie. They led us on. They led Americans on. But the thing that worries me about 9/11 and what's happened to America hence, you know, I call it the self-hate propaganda. The self-hate propaganda that started after 9/11, that's led to Obama's presidency, that's led to Sharia in America. Just look at Dearborn, Michigan. Just look at Dearborn, Michigan. You know, the enemy's through the gate. We have the enemy in our Congress, the enemy's in the judiciary. When I say the enemy, I'm talking about the Marxist-Islamist coalition, funded, supported by China, by Russia, by Iran, and by the George Soros of the world. They say he's a Jew. He's a self-hating Jew. He's not doing, you know, he'd be happy if the Palestinians, it seems like he'd be happy if the Palestinians just wiped Israel off the map. He doesn't care. You know, and I know Judaism and Zionism, you know, there's a connection there. But this self-hate that we have for ourselves now, look what's happened now with the BLM terrorists. Because they're not about social justice, they're Marxists. They're Marxists and they're Islamists. And Antifa, they're not about justice or stopping fascists. You know, Antifa was fighting the Antifa group, the anti-fascist group, was a communist group that wanted totalitarian control of Germany. And through the 20s and 30s, they literally street fought the Nazis in Germany. So you had the National Socialists and, and the communists, both trying to establish a totalitarian regime, fighting each other. That's where Antifa came from. They're not just trying to stop fascists. The name Antifa was because they called the Nazis fascists. But it was the communists versus the fascists, the brown shirts versus the black shirts. But they're the same. It's based on Marxism. It's based on totalitarian rule. It's based on race hate. It's based on trying to get the self-hate propaganda narrative through so countries and cultures give up. Give up and walk away. And, you know, it's just, and 9/11 has ushered this in, you know? And if it was an inside job or it was Islamist terrorists or both, what matters now is we have to learn how to fix this crack in America. Because we see these people out on the streets now defending their violence, rationalizing their violence, that they like they have some kind of higher moral order to come and physically hurt people, to burn and injure policemen, to call for death to America in the United States. Well, who chants death to America? The Iranians every day in their government chamber. Death to America, the great Satan. Death to Israel, the little Satan. Satan. Ha! They're the Satan. They're the Satan. So don't sit there and give me these conspiracy theories that, oh, there was bombs all set up all over the buildings and it was, you know, a pyrotechnic plan and they dropped the plan and all this crap. I need a lot more than I've ever seen to believe that. This was an act of the jihadist terror, the Islamist terror. It's been around for a long time. I mean, the Barbary Coast Wars was Islamist terror. And, but you know, Michael Cutler wrote a really nice piece in Front Page called Today's 19th Anniversary of 9/11. And he notes that today, even as we remember the terrorist attacks of 9/11, 2001, America finds itself under attack by anarchists. Well, you heard what I said about that. They're all Marxists. And radical leftists and violent criminals who have been released under the guise of bail reform to protect criminals from COVID-19 while they commit murders, rapes, robberies, and other violent crimes. I mean, do we have a self-hate problem, ladies and gentlemen, based on what Cutler just wrote there? Well, listen, certainly there's no shortage of news reports about acts of extreme violence carried out across the United States, primarily in cities run by leftist radicals, literally following the old dictum of news reporting. If it bleeds, it leads. However, the threat of terrorism continues, but has been all but ignored by the media and our politicians. Consider that New York's disgusting mayor, de Blasio, attempted to block the reading of the names of the victims of the terror attacks of 9/11 and the lighting of the twin spotlights, a practice that has been going on since September 11, 2001, purportedly out of concerns for COVID-19 virus, a concern that he ignored during massive violent demonstrations in New York, the city that is most heavily impacted by those attacks. Right? Now, on August 14, 2020, the Miami Herald reported, "This is a disgrace, outrage after 9/11 light show canceled over COVID-19 concerns." Now, additionally, for the first time, Americans who were born after the attacks of 9/11, they're going to be voting. And furthermore, many of our schools are failing to teach their students about the attacks of 9/11 or the ongoing threat of terrorism posed by radical Islamists. You know, and instead, they'd rather teach this conspiracy theory that George Bush and the Saudis did it together so they could go attack Iraq. Back to the article. Indeed, who could ever forget the outrageous description of the 9/11 terror attacks by Representative Ilhan Omar, when she said on that day, some people did something. On September 11, 2019, Fox News reported on this. Ilhan Omar slammed on 9/11 anniversary by victim's son after some people did something, quote. Now, furthermore, sanctuary policies implemented by radical political leaders act in opposition to the finding of the 9/11 Commission and undermine the national security and public safety for our entire nation. And Cutler notes that the official report, 9/11 and terrorist travel, include this paragraph. I'm going to read this paragraph that Cutler emphasized, and I think this is so true. This is from the report. Thus, abuse of the immigration system and a lack of interior immigration enforcement were unwittingly working together to support terrorist activity. It will remain largely unknown since no agency of the United States government analyzed terrorist travel patterns until after 9/11. This lack of attention meant that critical opportunities to disrupt terrorist travel and therefore deadly terrorist operations were missed. Think about that. And if we were looking to China realistically, do you think we could have slowed down those infected people that came through our ports, our airports, and our ocean ports that brought that disease here? That disease didn't come floating on the Gulf Stream, didn't come floating on the Pacific winds. People brought it here. COVID-19, you know. But see, that's the point. We have not learned from 9/11. A lot of analysis has been done. A lot of things have been done. But, you know, the media still picks and chooses their stories. Picks and chooses their stories. And it's getting pretty bad. And Spencer had an article that there's a Muslim leader who says Islam is the second religion of France, and those who do not like it, like us, have only to leave France. So now the Muslims are demanding that the French leave if they don't like them. You know, remember, love it or leave it. You know, if you don't love America, then get the hell out. Well, now these people that have come into France over the years, you know, especially immigrants are really from out. Look, Algeria was a French colony. There was a lot of terrorism there to get the French out. There was. And the French screwed up Vietnam. The French screwed up Algeria. Okay? There's no doubt about it. And then they felt guilty. And then they felt self-hate. And then they let all these people in. You know? And so, in Lyon, hundreds of people demonstrate against racism and Islamophobia. Now, there were arson attacks at two mosques in the Lyon metropolis, and they continue to cause great emotion. Several associations, the Salam Association, I'm sorry, this is from Le Progrès, it's an interpretation from this French magazine. They have called for a demonstration against racism and Islamophobia. 100 people were present, but Abdelaziz Boumediene, president of the Movement for International Solidarity, sounds like a Soros name, doesn't it? Called for 200, 300 to say no to Islamophobia. Islamophobia. Like that's some kind of a weird fear. Well, there's reason. You know, when you're getting terrorist attacks, when you live in Israel and you're driving your kid home from school and people are throwing Molotov cocktails at you, you have a reason to fear this Islamist jihad. Just like they're trying to make us fear this Marxist Islamist revolution going on in our streets. They want us to be intimidated, to hide. I mean, of course, if that doesn't work, they can always call for a COVID-19 lockdown and keep us in our houses. It's just, it's outrageous where we are, what we've accepted, and what's been, you know, and what's been happening. But there's opportunity now. And there's opportunity now because people are sick of the emergence of the Palestinian issue. And Khalid Abdou-Tomei, he is an award-winning journalist based in Jerusalem. He's a Shulman Journalism Fellow at the Gatestone Institute. You know, he notes that many Gulf citizens describe the Palestinian leaders as merchants of the Palestinian issue. And this is, look, you know, one thing about Antifa and BLM and these groups, they're all talking about BDS. They're all calling Israel an apartheid state, and it's a lie. It's a lie. But the merchants of the Palestinian issue, they've accused him of financial corruption and embezzlement of public funds. Here's a quote. Quote, the enemy of the Palestinian cause is not Israel, but the Palestinian comrades, the disgraceful merchants of Palestine, who don't want Palestinian issues to be resolved. Before the Palestinian leaders criticize others, they need to take a look at themselves and their miserable situation, the condition of their people, whom you have destroyed. And that was a quote from Shuja al-Hatoli, Saudi journalist and author. That was from Twitter on September 7th. Okay? And Khalid also notes that the Palestinian leaders have accumulated huge personal fortunes, possibly in part thanks to donations from Western taxpayers and their uninquiring governments. Some Gulf Arabs interpreted Hamas remarks as incitement to carry out terrorist attacks against the Gulf states. Quote, the funny thing is that Muhin Hamad called for armed actions against the Gulf, not Israel. And that was on Saudi social media. But by alienating the Gulf states, the Palestinian leaders are further ravaging their own people, especially those who live and work in these countries. Abbas has already wrecked the Palestinians' relations with Israel and the U.S. And by offending the Gulf states and depicting their residents as backward illiterates, Abbas and the leaders of the Palestinian, now the Palestinian, you know, story, okay, is what they've been rallying around for years, but things are changing. Mike Pompeo was reported by Breitbart, by Matthew Boyle, Pompeo. He says it's time to send Afghanistan on the next step in its trajectory with peace talks. You know, he told reporters on the way to Doha, Qatar, that the United States is committed to ending the war in Afghanistan once and for all. And now some of these people are open to it. And don't you know, a Norwegian parliament member named Christian Tybring Gjedde, he's a member of the Norwegian parliament, he nominated Trump for the Nobel Peace Prize because of the negotiated deal between Israel and the UAE. Now, are all these deals the best thing you could get for Israel? If you're just thinking about Israel, you're a Zionist thinking about, maybe not. But this shows the huge breakdown now. The opportunity is ripe. You know, you don't have John McCain and Hillary Clinton funneling money to the Syrian armies, to Libyan armies, to Algerian armies, to all these terrorists, to the guys in Syria, you know, Assad and all his crazy crew and the Iraqis and you don't have American State Departments, you know, fawning over the Ayatollah and his government leadership. These opportunities are here now. The Palestinians are pissing off their own people and pissing off their own support. Because after all these years, I mean, Arafat was given billions of dollars. Now, he took care of his family. They all lived in Paris. They all went to private schools. While he was running around in his head cover, you know, teaching people how to make bombs, taking the money he was getting that was supposed to help a community, build a grocery store, build a school, create some economy. Instead, he's buying weapons and blaming Jews and Israel for everything, like many other people do. You know, it's like race pimps, Jew pimps, all these people that teach this hate to maintain their power, to maintain their power. And what is Trump doing besides winning a Nobel Peace Prize? This was a Norwegian guy, folks. This wasn't, you know, wasn't like Tom Cotton or somebody in his administration doing it. This is a Norwegian parliament member. Remember how Obama flirted with the head of Norway? Well, you know, it's funny because Robert Spencer also wrote in Jihad Watch that when Trump takes on the military-industrial complex, he echoes this beloved American president. Now, in a stunning and brave demonstration that he is just like everybody else in the established media and a reliable company man in the nation's foremost anti-Trump propaganda machine, CNN national security reporter Ryan Brown tweeted Monday, quote, in an unprecedented public attack by a sitting U.S. president on the leadership of the U.S. military, President Trump has accused U.S. military leaders of seeking to start wars to boost the profits of defense contractors. What did he say? Trump said that the military leadership is pushing certain wars to boost profits of defense contractors. That sounds like corruption. Now, coming on the heels of the media outrage over the false claim that Trump termed American troops losers, this is just, and that, notice that takes the story. The story wasn't that Trump challenged the military-industrial complex. The story is that he called World War I veterans that died losers. But Brown's central claim was wrong. Trump's remarks were not unprecedented, and indeed were following one of the more enduringly important statements by a president in modern times. Trump said at a press conference Monday, "I'm not saying the military is in love with me, but the soldiers are. The top people at the Pentagon probably aren't, because they want to do nothing but fight wars so that all those wonderful companies, they make the bombs and make the planes and make everything else, stay happy. But we're getting out of the endless wars. You know how we're doing." Now, in response to Ryan Brown's tweet, many commentators pointed out that Trump's words were hardly unprecedented, as he was merely echoing an important warning from one of his predecessors, a man who was a general before he was president, Dwight David Eisenhower. You know? Stung by the criticism, CNN's Brown huffily responded, "Some folks really ought to read what President Eisenhower actually said in his farewell address. While they are both critical of the military-industrial complex, nowhere does Eisenhower actually accuse the leaders of engaging in shooting wars to boost profits." But you know, we know what's going on. We know what happens at the Fed. You know, we know what happens when these people in government, they retire, or these people in the military, they go and they retire, and they become lobbyists, or they become lobbyists for who? For Boeing? For the military-industrial complex? It's happening, ladies and gentlemen. But even though Trump is doing great stuff for minority communities with unemployment, even though I thought he did a really brilliant job considering nothing was ready for the pandemic, you know, and he's doing all these great things. This university professor from Rhode Island said that there's nothing wrong with the murder of a Trump supporter from a moral perspective. You know, this is what we're dealing with here out on the street and with Antifa. This is insane. Well, the University of Rhode Island professor, Eric Loomis, he decided to support the murder of Aaron J. Danielson. That was the guy from Patriot Prayer that was murdered in Portland. Now, back in 2012, Loomis came under the radar after he called the NRA leader Wayne LaPierre, called for his head on a stick following the shooting massacre of Sandy Hook Elementary School in Newtown, Connecticut. Only weeks later, in January 2013, Loomis stated, "I know the central mission of the Republican Party is to have a membership made up of entirely old rural white people." Who's that sound like? Anyway, at the moment, Loomis is once again under fire for publicizing a blog post he titled, "Why Was Michael Reinhold Killed?" Reinhold is the man associated with fatally shooting Danielson. Reinhold was executed by federal authorities that tried to arrest him. Michael Reinhold is the guy who killed the fascist in Portland last week. He admitted it and said he was scared the cops would kill him. Well, now the cops have killed him, Loomis published in his article. He said, "I'm extremely anti-conspiracy theory, but it's not a conspiracy theory to point out you believe this guy? This guy Loomis? It's okay now. It's okay to kill those fascists, right? And don't you see those videos where we're all Nazis, we're all fascists, we're all racists, we're all haters, and they feel morally justified to kill us. And here's a professor at the University of Rhode Island that should be terminated immediately for saying it's okay to murder anybody. It's unbelievable. It's unbelievable." And then, you know, with the re-echoing now of, you know, Russia collusion in the election. And of course, we all know that China is hacking. We know Russia's hacking. But then these are the stories that seem to get under the radar. And this was written by Alan Credo at Washington Free Beacon, who I love, the Washington Free Beacon. Iran behind hack attacks and online disinformation campaigns to boost Biden. Tehran waging a cyber attack to sway the 2020 presidential election. Really? Really? I mean, see, the whole idea that Russia would want Trump is insane. because he's put sanctions on him. And the idea that China would, I mean, forget it. He's been fighting with China. You know, he cost China a lot of money and a lot of profit these last couple of years. But what Credo wrote was that Iran is behind an ongoing series of hack attacks and online disinformation campaigns meant to influence the 2020 U.S. presidential election and boost Democrat candidate Joe Biden. The Islamic Republic is betting on Biden's campaign, according to regional experts, and U.S. officials tracking the country's efforts to sway the presidential contest. Tehran is engaged in cyber espionage operations targeting President Donald Trump's campaign since the late 2019. Cyber experts say. So it also has joined adversarial regimes such as Russia and China in waging online disinformation campaigns on social media as part of a larger effort to polarize voters. So how come Zuckerberg and Jack at Twitter, why aren't they stopping this? I wonder why. Maybe why the NBA is defending Chinese over our own country. Now, Iran's efforts include amplifying anti-Trump voices in its state-controlled news outlets and creating false online personas to elevate similar material. Both Facebook and Twitter have moved in recent months to remove a litany of false accounts that they say were controlled mainly by Iran, Russia, and China. Now, these countries have promoted disinformation about the coronavirus pandemic, critiques of Trump's performance. The sophistication of these attacks has ranged from advanced stealth efforts to infiltrate the campaign and elected officials to more amateurish campaigns promoting propaganda via a slew of false social media accounts. Well, what about that? Now, Iran's efforts are meant to undermine the 2020 election. You know, you couple that with these mail-in ballots, man, and we're really looking at a problem. And this guy Biden, how can he even be running? You know, do you know that he was out, you know, even in February 2020, he said he worked in 2016 on a climate accord with a leader that died in 1997. I mean, he's always been a liar. This isn't just because he's having problems now. And then I think it was yesterday, he botched the military coronavirus death count. And he claims that he apologized that he cited a Michigan number. You know, but Biden cited the number of confirmed cases and deaths from COVID-19 in Michigan as being the numbers for the military, saying that the armed forces had seen 118,984 cases and 6,104 deaths. I mean, this guy doesn't know what he's doing. But you know what? You want to know what? He got the endorsement of our favorite organization, Planned Parenthood. They endorsed him. And of course, right? Because that's what this is all about. It's all about eugenics. You know? It's all about eugenics. It's incredible. And Kamala, what a joke. I mean, talk about a putzette. You know, she was the one out there talking about how it's critically important that these protests continue because they want the Marxist Islamists to take over. But she went to visit Miami. You know, I'm here in Florida. And she went to visit Miami on Thursday. Joe Biden was hiding in his bunker. And the Gateway reported and brought all these pictures up. Well, the Latinos for Trump, they were lining the streets. The Cubans were out. All these people were out. They had signs saying, no socialista, no comunista. They don't want Kamala Harris. Latinos from South America and Cuba who have suffered under socialist and communist regimes have come to the U.S. for a better life. And they know Biden and Harris will usher in socialism. I mean, who would know better? Who would know better watching it happen than the people that ran away from it already? No comunista. Everybody say after me, pronounce after me. No comunista. No socialista. Now, the Latinos for Trump made it clear that unlike Kamala Harris, they support the police with a sign that says, Apoyen la policía. Now, the conservative Cubans and Venezuelans in Miami were not impressed with Kamala Harris pandering at all. And they were really pushing it, man. These people have to go. Trump's blowing them away, folks. It's going to be 60-40. You can write it down, 9/11/2020. I predicted it. Trump's going to win 60-40. Hey, thanks for listening to Feldman World Review. This is Brian Irving, your host here, saying, when the going gets tough, the tough keep the faith.
world, I just live in it.
The number you have reached, 911, has been changed to a non-published number.
Go ahead. Make my day.
Hey, I want to thank you for listening to the 9/11 2020 episode of Feldman World Review. This is Brian Irving, your host here, thanking you for tuning in. And we're sending our prayers out. It's a solemn day. It changed America, right? It was before 9/11, after 9/11. And America's got to pull itself together. We got to fix this big crack in our country. We've got to get these Marxist and Islamist revolutionary coalition rioters and murderers out of the way. And we have to get back to the business of America and really making America great again. We have to come out in overwhelming numbers to win this coming election in November. We have got to outvote mail-in voting. We have to outvote dead people voting. We have to outvote illegal aliens voting. We have to outvote felons voting. We have to outvote people that don't exist voting, because there's not going to be any way to control it. We have to have it. We've got to be, we want a 60-40 win. We want to win by 15 to 20% for sure, so they can't claim that whatever they want to claim. Iran, Russia, and China are working to get Democrats elected. They wanted Hillary. They didn't want Trump. They want Biden. They don't want another 4 years of Trump. And that's why we have to have another 4 years of Trump. So thanks for tuning in. Remember, Wednesday nights, although this week it became Friday nights at 10 o'clock, Sundays, 10 o'clock. Just look for the posts on Facebook, on Parler, on Twitter. This is Feldman World Review. And when the going gets tough, the tough keep the faith.